From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2014, backstage at Studio 54 for the Broadway production of Cabaret. NPR host and journalist Ari Shapiro was making a brief visit to New York before heading back to the UK, where he was based for NPR at the time. Shapiro was there to see one of his best friends from college who was in the cast. One of the stars was the great Alan Cumming, and Shapiro was offered the chance to head backstage and meet him. Shapiro was, of course, a big fan of Alan Cumming. I think we all are. He had no idea if Cumming was a fan of Shapiro and his work on NPR. As it turns out, before Ari Shapiro even made it to Cumming's dressing room, the actor heard and recognized Ari's voice coming up the stairs. There's just something about the power of NPR, I guess. I'm going to read now from Shapiro's book that recounts what happened next. Quote, Alan welcomed Ben and me into Club Cumming, his dressing room turned bar, perpetually stocked thanks to a sponsorship by Campari America. Having seen him on screen in roles that required American, English, and German accents, I found his natural Scottish lilt a bit of a surprise. He kindly said hello as he took off his makeup and apologized that he couldn't host me for a proper cocktail. Club Cumming was the scene of post-show carousing most nights, and years later the name would transfer to a brick-and-mortar bar in the East Village that hosts events from knitting to burlesque. But that Sunday, Alan was about to jet off to his birth country to spend his one free day a week campaigning for Scottish independence. As it happened, I would fly to Edinburgh the following morning to report on the referendum. We said a quick hello, goodbye, as Alan rushed off to catch his plane. I didn't ask for a selfie, and he didn't offer. I assumed that might well be our first and last encounter. 5 years later, we created our own cabaret-style show together. End quote. Well, this weekend, Rochester is the direct beneficiary of this encounter. Cumming and Shapiro are bringing their debut musical called Och and Oi, a considered cabaret. Described as a whimsical night of mirth and mayhem with two friends to the end, the show aims to highlight the duo's musical talents, and they are considerable. It also highlights their abilities to use their crafts to help audience better understand themselves and the world. Cumming and Shapiro are in Rochester on Sunday for that performance. It's happening at 7:30 Sunday night at the theater at Innovation Square. Tickets still available now. But first, I'm honored to welcome them both to Connections. Ari Shapiro, host of NPR. Now you're on NPR Local Turf. Welcome. Hey, thanks for being with us, Ari.
Dawson, I'm so honored. Of all the interviews I've ever done with Alan, this is the first one where I've gotten top billing, so you made my day.
I got to give you something. Alan Cumming, I don't even know if I'm qualified to interview you. It is an honor. How are you, sir?
I'm furious. I'm furious. I'm absolutely furious.
You know, I have to admit, Ari, in reading your book, I kind of figured that what happened next was, you know, you would be on this quick path to this partnership that is bringing us to Rochester for the show on Sunday. But it didn't quite happen that way. And I want to start by asking...
It was a slow burn.
A slow burn. I want to start by asking Alan, because Ari writes that because you are slightly older than him, you've experienced a kind of shift in fan behavior from autograph-seeking to selfie-seeking. And I wonder, Alan, if Ari had asked for a selfie that night in 2014, do you think that would have prematurely ended this relationship?
No, why? Why would you think that?
No, Alan is so kind to selfie seekers. He's a lovely, yes. Lovely celebrity to fans.
How much has changed over the years, Alan, in the way that fans interact with you when they come up to you?
Oh, well, of course, it used to be they'd come up under the light of a gaslight in the streets and beyond their penny farthings. I remember the moment precisely when someone took a photo of me against my will or without my knowledge in a shop in London with their camera phone, the phone on their camera. I remember that was the early 2000s. That's completely changed everything because before people would have an autograph or something, yeah, or just say hello. And then since then, it's the hilarious sort of acquisition of a moment rather than the experience of the moment. So people sometimes sort of just want the proof of the thing, not actually engagement. So it's kind of interesting. I always say, you know, I don't feel I always have to take a selfie. I don't see why I should if I don't want to, if it's in a situation where I feel I'm not at work, or I'm not, you know, I'm doing something that's just private in my life. Other times, of course, I feel it's absolutely appropriate. But if I don't want to, and I'm in a bar or a restaurant or something, I always say to people, you know, if it's nice to meet you, but I'm not, don't want to take a photo, because if I have to take one with you, I'd have to take one with everybody here, because everybody would see. And 99.9% of the time, people are totally get it and actually feel glad that you've shared something about your experience with them. Now and again, you'll get someone who's just like I am right now, furious, absolutely furious, and doesn't want to really meet you. They just want the proof that they've, you know, they just want the proof, not the actual experience. It's kind of weird.
Now, there is a lot of wisdom there. I think that that says so much about modern media and social media culture. Do you want the experience, or do you want to be able to tell people that you had an experience?
Right.
Yeah. But the path to this partnership was not just a quicker linear one. And Ari, it was a couple of years later that you ended up interviewing Alan for NPR. Is that right?
Well, it actually was not for NPR. It was a book interview, but it was part of his book tour.
Ah, very
so
good.
It was live on stage at a venue in Washington, D.C. It's, you know, when you're on book tour, you try to line people up in every city. And I guess Alan's top choice in DC was not available. So I found myself on stage talking to him about this book called You Gotta Get Bigger Dreams. And after that, I had a solo cabaret show that I was doing in New York, and it included a song that I knew Alan was familiar with. So I asked if he would come up and sing a verse with us. And so we sort of did a little thing here, a little thing there. And then finally, it was the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, and there was an event in Washington, DC at the Newseum about the relationship between LGBTQ rights and popular entertainment or something like that. So it was me and Alan in a conversation, and we were walking off the stage at the end of that event. And Alan turned to me and said, you know, we have such a good rapport when we do these sorts of things. We should make a show together. And I turned to him and I said, don't joke about that, because I will absolutely take you up on it if you're serious. And he said, Ari, I am serious. And the next thing you know, we made this cabaret called Och and Oi, and we're bringing it to Rochester.
I have to say, Ari, that you are sort of, you and I are almost the exact same age, and yet I'm feeling the decay of age. You are sort of frustratingly good looking and good at seemingly everything you do.
Oh,
and
so, stop this.
I know. Don't worry, Alan. No, I want to turn the tables here, Alan, because Ari describes in his book, you kind of glossed over it, but you describe in your book that before you had this partnership with Alan Blossom, you are performing on stage two shows in a night, and you claim that the first show was a flop. And so, you know, you're nervous about doing the second show that night. Turns out Alan and his husband are coming to the show, and you're like, oh, goodness gracious. It could not have been that much of a flop. You're probably a tough critic.
I don't think a solo performer ever has a good perspective, but I can say relative to other performances that I've done before and since, I didn't feel great about it. And the second show I did that night, the one that Alan came to, was mostly empty. But I have had my own experiences of being in a nearly empty theater watching a show that had an impact on me, that changed my life as an audience member. And certainly that solo show that I did that night was one of a series of dominoes that led to the moment we're in now. And so I think perspective is key to literally everything in life. And the same is true of experiences that in the moment feel like they're failures. Everybody at every level, including the most successful people you've ever met, have had lots of failures. And if they haven't, they haven't stretched and tried new things and challenged themselves. And I think it's really important to remember, and I have to keep reminding myself, that failure isn't a deviation from the process. It isn't straying from the path. Failure is part of the process. Yeah. It is part of the path.
Absolutely. Alan, what did you think of his performance that night?
Oh, I thought it was great. I remember just thinking how, yes, a few notes. No, I thought it was great because it was sort of like getting to know Ari a bit more as well. You know, I sort of, because it was all about him kind of, he sang all these songs from different countries where he'd gone as an NPR correspondent. And so it was like this little potted bio. And also he's so sort of, as you said, so annoyingly proficient at everything he turns his hand to, even gardening. And I loved hearing, there's all these different languages and everything, and it was great. Then I sang this beautiful Scottish song with him, so that was nice. But I I sort of, there had been a few years where, you know, since we met, and I knew people who knew Addy and like vice versa. And so we were kind of circling each other for a little bit. And that those two, you know, that doing that show with him at Joe's Pub, and then also those two occasions when he interviewed me for things, was sort of stepping stones. And I think I realized, you know, when we were in the middle of those things, what a good rapport we have, because we are sort of very different. And I enjoyed when I was being interviewed by him, how he wasn't just a sort of pushover interviewer. A lot of these things you do, you know, when you're asked questions, it's kind of just sort of fluffy and you're served soft balls. Is that what you say in America?
I guess so. Softballs.
Easy peasy questions, and you know, and nobody really challenges you. And he'd talk back and sort of go, what do you mean by that? And you know, and I like that. I mean, I think not every celebrity does, but I do. I get so bored of just sort of, you know, saying the same thing again and again and again. So I actually really appreciated and kind of felt a connection with Ari early on just because of that. And so I think that's carried on into our show and our relationship, because we are quite, I mean, we're hilariously different. But I think that's what makes the show, quite fun. Actually, we play on that. And we play those shows about playing on our difference.
100%. Part of what I think both of us have enjoyed about doing the show over time is that we maintain that dynamic of kind of ribbing each other and catching each other when one stumbles, and then a slight level of one-upsmanship and kind of needling along with friendship and mutual support. And that kind of push-pull dynamic, I think, is what keeps it so fun for us and hopefully for the audience too. It feels like hanging out with a couple of old good friends, one of us slightly older than the other.
Well, Alan, you are, I mean, so certainly accomplished. I actually thought there was a really wise description of your work in Ari's book, because our audience right now listening might be saying, oh, Alan Cumming, that's the guy from this, or that's the guy from that. And it may be totally different genres. I mean, there are not many people who have had the success across stages and genres and screens that you have, just realistically. And so the idea that you see Ari and almost, you know, on the spot, you tell him, you know, we'll do a show together, and you actually do it, says to me that you've created a kind of autonomy for your career and your life at this point that is really valuable. I think a lot of people would maybe envy or would love the chance to kind of set their own course, because I have to think there are all kinds of either demands or requests for your talents or your time. I mean, is that a sense of autonomy that you are enjoying at this point that says, if I'm going to do it, if I'm going to throw myself at it, but it doesn't have to be predictable. I might go do a show with Ari Shapiro.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I like about getting older, and you two will both understand that one day when you reach my great age, that you just think, well, life's too short. Why would I? And also I realize I've always done this, but I just do what I like, you know, and I if I have an idea, I mean, I'm kind of, it's slightly alarming. I feel a bit like, you know, like a superhero who must be careful of his powers, because I might damage myself. Because sometimes I think if I have an idea, I sort of mention it and people actually take me seriously and let me do it. And sometimes I feel like I better shut up about that, or otherwise I'll have another thing I've got to do. So I think that's the great thing about, if what you want to do in your job is to have fun and to make interesting work and do fun things and challenge yourself, then if you reach a situation where you can actually just say, oh, I'd like to do this, and it happens, but it doesn't get much better than that. And yeah, I mean, I realized if I said to Ari, let's do a show, that he would probably want to. And so I'm also a man of my word. You know, I really, I do follow through, and I do sort of honor my choices. And I just think in my whole life, I've always done very left field, nutty things. And I've always been my own man. And obviously people try to, you know, you have a team of people who sort of, I mean, there's people in my life, I have a manager. I mean, imagine his job, because I'll suddenly just say, oh, I can't do that, because I'm now running a theatre in the Highlands of Scotland, or, you know.
Can I tell a brief story about that?
Yes, go ahead.
I find it so inspiring that, you know, Alan is at a phase of his career where he can, as he says, do literally anything. And a couple years ago, the thing he chose to do was create and perform a solo dance piece based on a life and poetry of Robert Burns. And I saw the final performance he did on a Sunday evening, having just finished a matinee. Alan, as he will tell you, is not a trained dancer. And yet he chose to do this thing that he didn't know whether he would or could succeed at it. And the performance that I saw came after he had just broken a toe at the end of the previous matinee. And he went ahead and performed the show to thunderous applause, standing ovations, and requests to take it on to many other cities, to which he politely said, no, thank you, I've got other things to do now. To me, that illustrates an approach to a creative life that is so, I mean, it goes back to what I said about failure. If you don't try to do things that you don't know whether you can do or not, if you don't give yourself the opportunity to try and fail, then you'll never be able to surprise yourself by succeeding at something that feels so outside the realm of what you would typically think of yourself as doing.
Well, on that note, Ari, about a year and a half ago, you told CBS Sunday Morning that there was still a part of you that cringed when you were introduced as a serious journalist who plays in a band, because apart from the stage performance here, you've been part of Pink Martini. And of course, you've performed around the world now. You've been on the biggest stages. Are you past that part of your life when you would cringe if you're introduced as a journalist who's in a band?
I am. I think there are still people who say it with a bit of a sneer, and I no longer care, which is a really good feeling. Mm. I think when I started singing with Pink Martini, which was about 15 years ago, you know, I've been host of All Things Considered now for a little over 9 years. And so when I started singing with Pink Martini, I was still pretty early in my journalism career. I was NPR's justice correspondent. I didn't quite know where the path was going to lead. And I didn't see a model of somebody who bridged different worlds in quite the way that I was now starting to bridge different worlds. And so I wasn't sure if it would be, quote unquote, allowed by the gatekeepers in those various fields. And I think one of the great things about getting older and becoming more established and being more secure in yourself is that you realize it doesn't necessarily matter what the gatekeepers say. And it's not a bad thing to occupy a space that you haven't seen people before you occupy in exactly that particular way.
No, that's great. I mean, in fact, let me ask both Ari and Alan about something that's been on my mind recently. I mean, everybody in every job or work situation can receive criticism. When it's a public-facing one, you know, there's going to be critics inevitably. And there are critics of this program. There's critics of myself. Had a bizarre interaction with a different radio host this week who was, for some reason, hung up on me and this show. And, you know, that's fine.
When we're off the air, you can name names.
Yeah, no, it doesn't bother me. What is so strange?
Was it one of my colleagues? Was it
no.
considered host?
No. It's, you know, commercial radio, and that's fine. What was so strange was all the people who've never met me jumping into the social media comments to just talk about my character or what they didn't like about me personally. And I've never met you. I don't really understand. Maybe social media invites this. But can I ask both of you? I'll start with you, Ari. Criticism doesn't bother me. I'm just amazed at how quick to vitriol people can be. And how do you find yourself, control is the wrong word, kind of regulating what kind of emotional space you're willing to let others have over you, if that makes sense?
I have actually always loved hate mail. I have a solo cabaret show in addition, and there's a whole section of the show where I talk about this. But part of my duties when I finished my internship at NPR 20 plus years ago, I became a temp overnight editorial assistant on Morning Edition. And one of my jobs was to answer the listener email inbox to Morning Edition. And so I would see all the hate mail that all the correspondents got, and I would forward it on to them. And when I became a reporter and started getting my own hate mail, I felt like I have arrived. And so to me, it means that people are paying attention and people are listening and people are engaging. And of course, there are ways I would rather they engage, but I'm aware that I have a platform and a megaphone that they do not necessarily have. And so if their frustration is pointed at me, it's not about me. And so I think I've developed a pretty thick skin where that doesn't really faze me, partly just because of my very early exposure to it directed at others before it was directed at me.
Hmm. Alan Cumming, you want to weigh in on that too? Do we have Alan still?
Oh no! Has Alan's line
oh,
dropped?
Oh no! We might.
I'm sure
this has never happened to you before, Ari Shapiro.
I have so many stories about that. But I'm sure he would enthusiastically second what I have to say.
We'll see if we can get Alan back on the line.
I don't want to speak for Alan, but because he has been in the public eye for so many years and has been famous since he was very, very young and went through a time when the British tabloids were absolutely horrific and ruthless to him and his family, rooting through his trash, knocking on his mother's door, he, I think, had a trial by fire that at this point has made him completely nonchalant about it. I mean, whatever my experience of hate mail may be, it does not even compare to the journey that he has been through in his career. Mm.
But Ari, you and I both are kind of in a bridge generation. You know, I try to explain this to people as old as my 12-year-old son. It's like, now I'm in sort of the bridge generation where I did not grow up with social media or a cell phone. People wrote actual letters on paper. And,
yeah.
You know, that stuff is very quaint now to kids growing up. And they're never going to experience a world like that. I kind of appreciate being in that bridge generation because I experienced what it was like to be an adult without an email address or, without social media accounts. And now that stuff is ubiquitous. I do think it has gotten meaner, and I don't want to be trite about it. I do think it has encouraged more nastiness. You agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the hordes of people on social media are able to be nasty in ways that when you had to put pen to paper was just there was more barrier to entry. There was more friction. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to note, Alan says he can hear us, but we cannot hear him.
Okay.
So whoever's troubleshooting, that's a little clue as to wherever the problem may be.
Okay. By the way, listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Ari Shapiro and Alan Cumming, who are going to be in Rochester this weekend. They have a musical. Is this amazing to you?
I would not describe it as a musical, actually.
A cabaret.
I would describe it as a cabaret.
A small C cabaret.
There are stories.
Small C
cabaret.
In a second, we're going to talk about the difference between a review and a cabaret, because I think sometimes people not really educated in this field, probably like myself, get confused. But it's a small C cabaret. It's called Och and Oy, a considered cabaret. And listeners who understand just how much talent Ari Shapiro brings to NPR as a journalist and an interviewer are going to really enjoy seeing Ari and Alan together on stage. So Ari is with us. Alan is with us.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Alan.
Oh, good.
Sorry we were torturing you. God. Did you want to weigh in on any of what you've been listening to, Alan?
What was it about? Oh, I sort of think in terms of critics and press and stuff, I feel like, obviously, I heard Ari saying about, yes, I've been, the tabloid fodder, and that's a really different thing. And because that's not really about your work. That's about you. As I say in our show, there came a moment in my life when I realized that people were as interested in my personal life or more perhaps than my work. And when that happens, it's really, you enter into a different sort of level of scrutiny. But I think in terms of critics, my attitude about it is that if you believe the good ones, you have to believe the bad ones. And vice versa. And so actually what's more important is that you form an opinion about yourself and your own work that is your own. And it is useful for me to understand how I'm being perceived in the world and what people think of the projects I'm in or of myself. But what I think of myself is more important to me. And that's why, because I do it for me. I hope other people like it. But if they don't, too bad. And also, I don't like everything I see. So I don't expect people to like everything I do.
No, I'm with you. And I would say to listeners as well, I always appreciate thoughtful criticism, and we get plenty of it. I think it makes the show better. I think it makes journalists stronger. There are certainly times, and we'll talk a little bit later in the program about bias and curiosity and interviewing and gatekeeping. So all that matters, and we want to hear from that. I just don't fully understand how quickly people feel like they can just decide they know you personally and they want to be vitriolic about you on a personal level. But, I guess that's perhaps the age we are in. Let's get back to something a little more pleasant. Let's listen to one of the cuts we have. In fact, I'm going to let Ari and Alan tell you more about it after we listen, but this is You're the Top. Now, listeners might feel like they know some of the musicality here, but I want to listen to Ari and Alan doing You're the Top, and then we'll talk about their small C cabaret called Och and Oy. Let's listen.
You're the top. You are joie de vivre. You're the top.
Well, sometimes.
You're a Broadway diva. You're a graceful swan. Your name is on a bar.
Club coming.
You are wild and frisky, a Scottish whiskey, a movie star.
That's right. You're the top.
Who told you that?
You leave haters cursing.
You should see my Twitter feed.
You're the top. You know, you're taller in person.
There you go.
I was Mr. Floop, but you get the scoop, you pup. And if Ari am the bottom, you're the top.
I got another one. You ready? You're the top.
Now and then.
You're a vegan dinner.
I am vegan.
You're the top. You're a Tony winner.
Awards mean nothing.
You're a cabaret, a Shakespeare play, a dream. You're the Oxford comma, a network drama, your self-esteem.
You're a star. Your career is glitter. You'll go far. You're all things considered. And a feet, a seat, a gardener's bumper crop. But if baby on the bottom, you're the top.
It's going to be so much fun on Sunday. Alan, Ari, you want to talk? Maybe I'll start with Alan here. The difference between a cabaret and a review and what the show is all about.
Well, my definition of a cabaret is sort of like a smorgasbord. You know, this it's got a variety of often vastly different moments all kind of shoved together into one overall thing so that you can be laughing as people were there laughing away and having a laugh there. And the next minute you can be saying something quite tender or quite moving or provocative. It's like a series of, that's why I love it so much. You can do so many different things in one evening. And a view to me would sort of seem to be more like kind of a fusion of a play and a cabaret. Like there's a sort of a narrative what it's about more. It's on a topic that is not just the sort of the personal nature of the people doing it. Performing it like in a cabaret. So I this is definitely a cabaret, a true cabaret, because it's got a variety of really vastly different elements and sort of sensibilities and even materials. I mean, we really do the gamut of sort of sublime to the ridiculous in terms of what we sing and what we talk about.
Ari, crowd surfing with cigarettes is the title of the chapter that kind of sets this up here. Tell me about that metaphor.
Yeah, so that comes from something that my dear friend who performs under the name Meow Meow does as a regular part of her show. And to me, it always felt like a good metaphor for what doing a cabaret feels like. Meow Meow holds two fake but very real looking lit cigarettes in one hand as she performs. And there always comes a moment in the show where she launches into the audience and they are holding her up, physically supporting her over their heads while she is belting out some incredible song and holding these two lit cigarettes, not actually, but might as well be, in her hand. And to me, the experience of doing a cabaret and watching a cabaret should always feel a little bit like that, where there's an element of thrill and the sublime and beauty and danger, and the audience is lifting you up and you're sort of floating and being carried along. And it's something that only exists in that moment with those people for that one night. And there's something just electric and alive about it. So that's why I gave the chapter that name. I just thought it was a perfect snapshot of how it feels when all of these elements come together in just the right way.
Well, I mean,
have you ever crowd surfed, Ari?
I have never crowd surfed, and I would love to. I feel like there's a moment in our show when we talk about crowd surfing, but if we ever know that this is like the final performance of Aachen Oi, I would really like to actually do it one day. Or maybe at Club Coming one night. I don't know. I'm not picky about where and when it happens.
It's kind of hard to do it actually at Club Coming because the ceiling's so low. There's some danger of getting your head bonked on like air conditioning pipes or lights.
I imagine you've tried.
The danger is the point.
Yes, I've done it.
Yeah, the danger is the point there. But the show has been so well reviewed. Spoke to a friend a couple days ago, who thought producer Megan Mack was saying, hey, this person loves Alan Cumming, would love to get, like, up, already got tickets. So listeners may be very well acquainted with Ari and Alan's show, but if you haven't, there are still some tickets available. It is Sunday night at the theater at Innovation Square in Rochester, 7:30. I know they would love to see you there. And by the way, Ari, I mean, at some point, it's probably going to happen, maybe it already has, where your fans from Pink Martini, your fans from Och and Oy are going to say, wait a second, you're on NPR?
I'm waiting for that day.
No? Okay.
You know, it hasn't happened yet, but I once interviewed Alan's dear friend, Kristen Chenoweth, about one of her albums, and she told me about how after she was on some TV show that was very famous, she had people coming up to her shocked that she sang. And of course, for those who know Kristen Chenoweth from Wicked and her many other roles, that seems absurd and ridiculous and hilarious. But I would love one day. I mean, you know, actually, I did just last year host a reality show on Netflix called The Mole. And while I've never met anybody who sees a Pink Martini show and had never heard that I do NPR, there are definitely people who've watched The Mole who had no idea what NPR is. So I'm moving in that direction.
I mean, if you haven't seen...
You know, that's like...
Oh, go ahead, Alan. Yep.
I was going to say that thing about people who don't, you know you from one thing and sort of are surprised with another. Once I did a show, I think it was one of my solo shows, and so and this lady meant that she didn't know that I sang, I think. I think it's like she knew me from The Good Wife or something. I can't remember what it was that she was, her particular demographic. But she said to me afterwards, I've just done this show, and she's at a meet and greet, and she went, oh, my God, I didn't realize you had talent. And I thought that was devastating and hilarious. But, yeah, she meant, yeah, she did, I think she meant to say, I didn't realize I could sing. But she actually said I didn't realize I had talent. So, you know, I'm getting a scam call. Hang on.
There have been people who, after a Pink Martini show, like in an autographed CD signing line or something, will say, "What? You've got such a voice. Why are you spending your time doing journalism? Why waste your time with that?" And I think, you know, you probably intend this to be a compliment, but it's not quite landing that way.
Well, just my brief aside on Kristen Chenoweth. If listeners want to see Kristen Chenoweth in action, just look up her Tour de Force song from Schmigadoon. One of the fastest moving single shot. I think that was all in one shot, this song that she performs. Listeners, if you know, you know. But, I mean, Alan was in Schmigadoon with the greatest name for a mayor of all time. I have to imagine that had to be a fun project for you, Alan.
Yes, I was Mayor Menlove, and evil eyes will have noticed that is a little Easter egg because he turns out to be gay as the story goes on. So, yes, it was such fun, actually. And the second one, Chicago, too.
We're talking to Alan Cumming, Ari Shapiro, about their show coming up here on Sunday night in Rochester, 7:30 on Sunday night at Innovation Square, at the Theater at Innovation Square. And there's something about live performance I know they both appreciate. I want to read another passage from Ari's book. Ari's book, by the way, is called The Best Strangers in the World, Stories from a Life Spent Listening, which is the subtitle, by the way, of someone who's like, you know, nearing the end of their life, a life spent listening. I mean, like, he's in his early 40s writing this book, but it's an accomplished life. So I'm going to read this passage because I thought this was really interesting here. Ari writes, quote, "When I started singing with Pink Martini several years into my journalism career, I remember that a live audience does provide some qualities that a radio broadcast lacks. There is a moment that everybody shares, together, in one place, an experience that will never exist again in quite that way. Everybody breathes the same air molecules for a brief stretch of time. There's an audible reaction as you walk the high wire and nail the performance or tumble off the tightrope and try to climb back on and salvage your dignity. I love how intimate and personal radio can be. Those qualities appeal to my instincts to connect. But I also love how communal live performances, that appeals to my instinct to form a collective." End quote. So Sunday night scratches a different kind of itch for you, Ari.
It's so great. I think everybody who does any kind of live performance, not even does it, attends it, appreciates it, knows that feeling, whether you are at a rock concert or an opera or a Shakespeare play, which is that this particular arrangement of people will never be in this room in this way ever again. And this performance is something that only exists in this moment and couldn't exist without the audience being there. And there's something really, not to get schmaltzy, but there's something very sacred about that. And to be able to co-create that with other performers like Alan, with the audience, with a band like Pink Martini, feels magical every time it happens.
Alan, what would you say the difference is and how visceral that live performance can be?
From what? From doing something on screen?
Yeah. From something with no audience at all.
Completely different. Couldn't be more different. I mean, I think like when you're acting on a set, you have a crew as an audience, and you are aware sometimes that what you are intending comes across because of their reaction. But you don't get at all the same sort of immediacy and the same electricity that. And also, when you're making a film and things, if you make a mistake, you go and just go back and do it again. I mean, in the theater, well, I do that. Actually, I stop the show always and go back and make when I've made a mistake. But you're not supposed to. But you know, there's that thing of. In the old days, it used to be on film, and you would rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, and then you'd do it as though it were a live performance because it was so expensive. Now on digital video or whatever it's called now, you can just, it doesn't matter so much. So there's more of a relaxed nature to filmmaking, which I like. Now and again, I do things in that are on film, and you remember how much more like the theatre it used to be because you were all. It was like you'd rehearsed and rehearsed, and now this is the first performance, which would be the first take. But for me, there's nothing more exciting than being in a room, being vulnerable, being sort of challenging yourself, and connecting with a bunch of strangers. It is an amazing thing, and this kind of show, this sort of cabaret show, which is sort of personal, and also performative. I feel is the It's my, when everyone asks, what do you prefer, stage or screen? I always say, in the unlikely event that I have a gun to my head, but I would choose this. I would choose this type of performance.
That'd be a very weird question to be asked with a gun to your head. Go ahead, Ari.
I'm not an actor who's ever played other roles, but I think Alan's right that particularly in a cabaret, when we are talking about ourselves and our lives and our experiences as ourselves, in front of an audience of strangers, there's something really vulnerable and personal and real about it that's different from, watching people in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Well, I did think of the point about the selfie and thinking about the live performance as I reread that passage on air right now, because, not to get all sort of fuddy-duddy, but, and I don't know what the rules are going to be on Sunday night with grabbing your cell phone and taking a live video. But, I wonder, Alan, do you view this in the same way as the question about the motivation for the selfie? When people are spending a lot of a concert experience or going to a staged performance of any kind and they spend a lot of the experience getting cell phone video, does that irk you or do you think that's just part of the time we're in?
I think it's hugely annoying. I hate it. I just think, be in the moment, why have you come to a theater and then you get your phone out? I mean, I get it. People take pictures. I mean, obviously it happens all the time. You can't stop it. But when people, and also if you're going to do it, be better at it. Be more, do it so obviously. Turn your bloody flash off. Things like that. I, it's obviously very, you're leaving the room. You've left. So I get it that people in the, quite a lot of people, video the end of our show, which is annoying because it's sort of a bit of a giveaway of a thing we've been, a little surprise element. But I see the videos of that quite a lot. But, it's not really a huge problem. But I do think the notion of it, when it's aside from it, it's at the curtain call, means that you're not in the moment, in the present, and you've kind of left the room. And it's the whole point is we're all there together. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it has got better actually. It used to be just people would have their phones out the entire time. I've gone into the audience and taken someone's phone off them when they were videoing
me.
Yeah. And then I just said, I'm right here. You can see me right here. Is this for the future? Did you come here for? A future memory, or did you come here for an experience? Mm-hmm. And I've also done a thing where somebody went to the loo very loudly, And I sort of said, oh gosh, we've lost one. You know, so I made some joke. And so the lady next to her said, oh, she went to the loo. I went, give me your phone. And so I got her phone and we did a video. I made the audience do a video with me and then gave it back to the lady. And then we carried on with the show. And it was so funny because at the end of the show, I waited at the side of the stage with my band and I saw the lady who was the neighbour of the person who'd gone off, you know, show her phone, and she screamed like a banshee. It's the best noise ever.
That's better than any cameo she could have bought.
Totally. My God, that would cost a fortune on Cameo.
Ari, you just mentioned the vulnerability that shows like this can bring, and you did write in your book that wasn't something you instinctively were drawn toward right away. It took some time. And I want to ask you a little bit about... you know, how you explore, maybe how your work intersects somewhat with NPR and what you do at All Things Considered, because people who admire your work talk often about your curiosity, about your desire, and you write about this, your desire to truly understand people who are different. And, you know, you married your husband in 2004. You've said that in some ways the country caught up to where you were. A few years after that, and yet 20
he's
years...
He's always ahead of the curve. He's always ahead of the curve.
But 20 years after you got married, Ari, there's a rather resurgent movement that seeks to, for example, undo the Obergefell decision to take away same-sex marriage rights. Do you feel like you can have constructive conversations, curious conversations, with people who are part of that movement?
Absolutely. I think there is an important place in our society for activism and for fighters, and I am not an activist and I am not a fighter. The place I occupy is one of illumination and conversation, and that is important too. And I think you make it more challenging. It's hard to be in both worlds at once, right? And I don't plunge into communities that are very different from myself out of a sense of obligation or journalistic requirement. I plunge into communities that are different from myself because I really like to learn about people and what makes them tick. And that curiosity doesn't go away because somebody disagrees with who I am or what I've done. In fact, it might be even deeper because of that. And so, as I say in the book, I sometimes feel like a microphone and a set of headphones and a recorder are like a snorkel and mask that allow me to plunge into these worlds that I wouldn't otherwise have access to and explore them and then get to share them with listeners. And so that is something that is so important to me that I value so much that I don't feel like it has to exist in conflict with or require me to compromise who I am or the choices that I make or the way that I live. And I feel really lucky that I have a job that allows me to do it.
And when it comes to that curiosity about one another, this is a time that is, you know, not to be cliche, but it is not only very polarizing in this country, it is frankly a bewildering time for many Americans. If you're a Trump voter, you might view Democrats as kind of strange, indecipherable creature. If you're someone like my father, a lifelong Republican who cannot stomach Donald Trump, you're baffled about why people celebrate his behavior. Like, you can't even relate to it. And how can Americans resist the feeling, Ari, of contempt for one another and remain curious about people who disagree?
I have two very tangible, specific suggestions. Number one, listen to WXXI.
Hey, there
Number
you go.
Two, come to the theater at Innovation Square at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday night to see Off and Oil. No, I mean, I'm joking.
Wow,
also,
that was smooth.
There are ways to build bridges of understanding, and we can't force people to walk across those bridges, but we can maintain those bridges and keep them open for business. And hopefully people will choose to walk across them. But there are lots of ways to connect with people who disagree with you, to get out of the echo chambers, to burst the bubble of likeness that we are all sort of cocooning ourselves into. And so we try to make those spaces and maintain them and hope that people will join us in them.
Well, Alan, as an American citizen yourself now, do you hold any confusion or regret?
Oh, about becoming a citizen?
Yes, I hope not.
I have confusion. I don't have regret. I mean, I think it's what Ali said is very good and admirable. But I also feel, you know, you have to draw a line in the sand. And I feel like it is impossible for me to engage with people who have voted for fascism, who think it's a good idea to encourage violence, to support violence, to support taking away people's rights, taking away women's rights, taking away queer people's rights, to have that as part of a platform. I think we, of course, have to be open and to try and understand. And I think, but if you have voted for that, that a line is drawn in the sand as far as I'm concerned, and we're just, I'm not going to engage with fascism.
Well, a few more minutes and then we're going to let these guys go. They've been so generous with their time.
That was a bit of a conversation killer, wasn't
it? No, it wasn't.
I'm not living on
them. I understand it entirely. And I'm sure, again, not to be cliche, but I'm sure Ari does too, because as a journalist, you are encountering people who say, look, I want to keep talking to my neighbors. I want to keep talking to my relatives. And then you're also talking to people who say, hey, unfriend me. I mean, if this was where you are on something, I don't want to be part of your life. I mean, we hear that wide range. And I understand it. I mean, my first instinct is, whoa, that's not very healthy. But then I think, no, I mean, I get it. I'm in a
neither is having your rights taken away or having a president encouraging violence against you. That's not healthy either. We shouldn't normalize what is happening. We've got to keep remembering the things that have happened and that a convicted felon is the next president of this country. Those things we should
in moments like this. Sorry, go ahead. You can finish that thought out.
No, you go. You go.
I was just going to say, in moments like this during our show, I take a long sip of water.
Yes. He's very silent.
I hold the water bottle in front of my face to obscure my facial expression, and I drink deeply.
It's like a ventriloquist. He's like a ventriloquist when, you know, they don't want to see their lips moving. So Adi maintains a very, dignified ambiguity about his beliefs whilst I rant off like I just had.
Alan carries no such obligations. There's more of a freedom.
No.
Though, Ari, one of the things that I think is more difficult about this moment for journalists, apart from the very obvious targeting of journalists with rhetoric that is pretty dark, but also I think it's just there's such a fragmented media now that people feel like they don't have to engage with anything that challenges them, and they just make a decision on, CNN is this, and Fox News is that, Newsmax is this, the New York Times is that, and it just silos, and they never even want to come visit and listen. And I'm just encouraging people, there have to be platforms that are still places that are like a public square that do bring in a lot of different voices, even when it's hard and challenging. And we are absolutely committed to trying to do that. But I think it is very hard because there's some people who don't even want to show up and have the conversation. Are you finding more people declining even having the conversation, Ari?
I don't know. I find like there are people who only want to hear from voices they agree with, and there are media outlets that cater to those people. And there are people who want to learn new things and hear from both voices they agree with and voices they disagree with. And I think that public radio serves that audience. And that audience doesn't necessarily lean left or right or neither. That audience is one that is curious, that wants to learn, that wants to not just have their pre-existing ideas reinforced. And this is in no way a commentary on what Alan just said. It's a commentary on media consumption patterns. And if you want to just reinforce your own beliefs, there's a place to do that. And if you want to hear new ideas, hopefully public radio is the place where you can do that.
Well, Alan, as we let you go here, public radio is a place where I've heard people like you talking about Scottish independence and the idea of self-determination there. That's still something you're working on?
Yes. We still don't have independence. So yes, I'm still working on it. It's something that's very important to me. I believe that my country would be better off being able to self-determine. And the fact that the Westminster government won't even allow the democratically elected Scottish Parliament to have another referendum, it seems to me only more reason why we should have independence, because we are not allowed to even self-determine to have a referendum about self-determination. I do think the actual act of self-determination itself is something that we all should think about a bit more. I think women in this country should be able to self-determine about their own bodies. I think we should in Scotland be able to self-determine about the future of our country when we are governed by an administration that we did not vote for. It just, I'm still gung-ho.
Well, I mean, one of the rare places I hear issues like that discussed is NPR, and it's a credit to All Things Considered and the great journalists that we support here with public radio. We're a member station, of course, WXXI, WEOS in Western New York, throughout the Finger Lakes, all the way to state line borders. We have listeners, expats across the country and around the world, and I want to just thank these two gentlemen for their time. Listeners, I just got a text from a friend who said, wait, Alan Cumming's on your show right now? He is, and he's actually doing a selfie hour down here at WXXI after the show. So he's not with us in studio, and he's not doing a selfie hour. But you can meet Alan on Sunday night, 7:30, the show Och and Oi, a considered cabaret, and it's happening Sunday, 7:30 p.m., a few tickets still available at the Theater at Innovation Square in Rochester. Alan Cumming, a great pleasure. You're generous with your time, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. So nice to meet there to talk to you.
And Ari Shapiro, we'll hear you on All Things Considered, but we'll also hear you on stage Sunday night. Thank you for being so generous with your time.
Thank you, Dawson. I will see you in Rochester Sunday and speak to you on All Things Considered on Monday.
You got it. And from all of us at Connections, thank you for listening. We are back with you next week on member-supported public radio.
I am vegan.
You're the top. You're a Tony winner.
Awards mean nothing.
You are cavalry. A Shakespeare play, a dream. You're the Oxford comma, a network drama. Your self-esteem.
You're a star. Your career is glitters. You'll go far. You're All Things Considered. And a beat, a sleet, a gardener's bumper crop. But if baby